fan with my main man, Joey Vendetta. So what you gonna do when the Fan 590 and Vendetta Mania run wild on you, brother?
Oh, yeah. It's Mania, all right. My name is Joey Vendetta, as the Hulkster just attested to. Just in case you thought that maybe I was representing something that wasn't actually happening. Because that might get you in a whole bunch of trouble. Welcome to Writer's Block for this December 31st, 2020. It is the final day of a year that many people would just as soon forget. And hopefully 2021 is going to bring us all a much more favorable outcome than what we've been subjected to on so many levels. But we're going to try to help you forget all that over the course of the next 3 hours with some sporting banter, some acerbic wit, and your opinions and your thoughts. You can always text us at 590-590. I'll give you the topic in a moment. One of them's the obvious one. What's your New Year's resolution, if you have one? I always start mine a few days before. And as I think I said many times on the air, it wasn't the COVID 30. I think I may have went COVID 40. You know, you heard the COVID 30. Well, I'm going the other way now. I've finally taken the giant vessel that is my inability to stopping at the fridge, and I've slowly turned it just past neutral. Is that one of your resolutions? To try and drop a few? Well, I always start early because I don't know that I necessarily need to put the New Year's resolution pressure on myself. Do you? Thanks to all the essential workers. In all sincerity, if you do something that helps to keep us going in any way, shape, or form, thank you to you. Because without you, it would have been a lot worse, as bad as we think it is. On the program today, we will talk to Rob Blake, the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings. For the second consecutive year, the Kings have the most prospects represented at the World Juniors. We'll discuss that and other things with Robert, who's probably sitting at his place on the strand in the beach in Southern California. Well, we're not. Well, I'm in St. Bart's still because I didn't have to come back. John Clayton, NFL insider, will join us. We'll talk NFL week 17 as the season is wrapping up. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Fitzmagic, is now FitzCovid. He's on the COVID list all of a sudden. Just came through. We'll talk to Ryan Callahan, former New York Ranger and Tampa Bay Lightning, and a guy that really left it out on the ice. Classic cliche, but it's true in his case. He announced his retirement. He'll join us halfway through hour number two. Mark Berman from the New York Post will join us to talk Knicks Raptors tonight as the Raptors 0-3. Could they conceivably lose to the 2-2 Knicks? It could happen. We hope it doesn't happen. And we hope you stay tuned for our conversation with Mark. Samantha Pell from the Washington Post will join us in the back half of this hour. She will discuss what Zdeno Chara may mean to the Capitals on this stunning one-year deal. It came out of left field. Discussion that he was talking to the Montreal Canadiens, but just getting across the border and uprooting his family would have been incredibly difficult. And of course, don't forget tonight, the Raptors, 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Roger Lajoie has the pregame and halftime show. Coverage gets going at 7 p.m. on the radio. Brad Fay and Sherman, I always want to call him Helmsley Hamilton, have pregame coverage on Sportsnet TV at 7 p.m. If you don't know who Sherman Helmsley is, look him up. The Jeffersons, all-time great show. We lost Marianne yesterday. If you're old like me, and you watched Gilligan's Island, or you watch it in reruns, she passed away. Most people were down with Ginger. I was a Marianne guy. Were you a Ginger or a Marianne guy? I was a Marianne guy. She seemed nicer. Not that Ginger was bitchy or anything. Just a lot of maintenance. I can't deal. I've already got my own maintenance to deal with. There's only one mirror in the bathroom. I'm taking it. And it used to be for more than just looking at it. Alberta is the first province to officially say the NHL can play games in its arenas. The federal government approves NHL camps, but of course the provinces must decide on the games. The NBA will reportedly require players and staffers to wear contact tracing sensors. I'm sure they're excited. And as you may have seen last night, Sweden's stunning 54-game unbeaten streak at the World Juniors was snapped by Russian machine Never Breaks. Tonight, it's the Finsters against the Canucks. And oh, that Finnish team looks good. 6-0 over Slovakia last night. Russia winning 4-3. What a great way to spend your New Year's Eve, watching the Raptors, watching the juniors, going back and forth, arguing with your, well, actually, you're not allowed to have any relatives over. None. Whoever's in your immediate household. We're going to be joined here in a second by Mike Feud in a couple of minutes. But what are your New Year's resolutions? Do you have any? Text us at 590-590. I want to hear from you. And you can tell me if you're going to have people over, even though you're not supposed to. Are you going to fraternize? Because as I sit here in St. Bart's by myself, my cabana people bringing me drinks with little umbrellas in them and various fruits, no alcohol, of course. I think of the former finance minister of Ontario. And as I once said to a friend of mine, I have a buddy of mine named Ray. He's a good friend of mine. He owns a mechanic shop. He's a guy that for a long time believed in the political system. And we play hockey together. And he's a hardworking guy. He's a big-hearted guy. He's one of those guys like me, when people need something, most often money, he always helps them out, right? $500 here, $1,000 there, $50 here. I do the same thing all the time. And you never get it back. Just remember, if you're going to lend money to people, you're not lending it. You're giving it to them. Anyway, Ray used to believe in politics. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I said to Ray, Ray, let me tell you something about politicians. And I said to him, they're all inherently crooked. It's part of the job. It's just to what degree? Someone just texted me and said, Finland versus the Canucks. Are you feeling okay? Yeah, the Canucks is in the Canadian team. We Canadians are called Canucks on occasion. Are you feeling okay? Because I'm feeling great. Thomas G, Texas, Mississauga. New Year's resolution. Bitcoin buy up. Buy Bitcoin shares. Galore. Get rich fast on cryptocurrency. What is this, an infomercial? We'll get to the rest of your texts later on this hour. But the one thing I will say, if you're going to do something, and I don't wish, I'm not a cancel culture guy. Certain people just jump on and stomp on people. There's always repercussions, but it really wasn't so much about you going to St. Bart's, is that you were stupid enough to get caught. For me, anyway. You tell everybody else to sacrifice, stay home, do something that helps someone else, wear a mask, and you're in St. Bart's. And you know what? If no one would have found out, and there wouldn't have been pictures on social media, we would never have known. But the worst thing that there is, in my opinion, is a poor crook. And not to say what you did was criminal, but it wasn't smart. Now, we're going to take a left turn and talk to someone that I do think is smart in assessing talent when it comes to the National Hockey League. a very dear and longtime friend of mine, former National Hockey League executive. He was also, I believe he was my winger, or I might have been his winger. I don't remember. In a men's hockey league 30-plus years ago, former assistant general manager with the LA Kings, at Fuda44LA on Twitter. Mike Fuda joins us now. Michael, how are you today?
Hello, my favorite winger.
Were you the center on that team?
Dane Walton was the centerman. So don't, okay. And as painful as that, you were a winger.
Oh, okay.
You were Selke-like.
And it really, Dane Walton, yeah, unfortunately it wasn't Frank Selke. It was Bob Selke, who owns a cleaner in Halliburton. But anyway, so Dane was so big that you had no choice but to make him the center, because I think he was almost as tall as Chara. He was probably 6'6", and then on skates, he was about 6'9". He had the wingspan where he could basically touch both boards at the same time, so we had no choice but to make him the center. And as I recall, we merged teams after you guys used to crush us all the time, but we had the way better-looking fans than you, and you're like, well, if we can't beat them, let's join them. That was our... Is that a fair recollection of what happened?
It was one of the finest negotiations of Sunday night hockey history. I was asked, it was about 15-0, and you called me into the hallway and said, if you bring myself and my cousin Johnny Ventura onto your team, the hot chicks sit behind your bench and you get into every bar free for the entire summer. I went in and I pleaded the case for about 20 seconds, and you guys were formally introduced to our team the next week.
And it was the first time you ever had an Italian on your team, so we were there for the blending of the Canadian and Italian cultures. And it was back when you used to use words like chicks, but now, of course, you would say fine women would join us in the bar after the game. So, but Michael, I got to ask you. Go ahead.
I had a lot of Italian friends, but none with that hair length.
No, buddy. You know what I got to tell you? And you know the reason we achieved that? Salon products only, Michael. Nothing off the shelf, okay? Don't ever forget that. So what we saw last night between the Russian team and the Swedish team, before we preview tonight's game, this Russian team, and Sweden was on a run, as I said off the top of the show. They had won a ton of games, and their streak came to an end last night. How great of a job has the professor done behind the bench? I mean, Larionov, who we both know, I've known Igor for a very long time, and I don't know a guy, I mean, other than Scotty Bowman, who Igor, I guess you could say, is a disciple of to a degree. I mean, he's a disciple of Tikhonov and Bowman. I mean, you want to talk about two guys to learn from, but Igor just has this demeanor and this calmness, and he looks like he's teaching constantly, which I'm not going to say it goes against what the Soviet Union used to be, but it certainly wasn't a warm and fuzzy show in the Soviet Union. And then Igor comes in, and Russia now just, they have a different vibe than they've had in the last several years.
100%. And I mean, and you know, as you said, Joy, you know Igor well. I've become very close friends with him. And we've been, last night I texted him after the game, he got right back to me. And I have never seen a Russian team. I also think that Igor is going to make an excellent National Hockey League coach when he chooses to do that. His knowledge of the game is second to none. But again, it's the first time I've seen a Russian team that has a coach that it's they're playing out of respect for him and not out of fear. And it's no knock. Like, I played with Valerie Bragg in Denmark, and he's coached that junior team for about the last 4 or 5 years. And Valerie's a real hard ass. And there is a sense, and that whole Russian fear factor is there. You can see these kids are being taught. I think personally, they're the dark horse team, and not like Russia's a dark horse team, but obviously Canada is a huge favorite. And with the goaltending they have, and I was shocked they lost to Czech Republic, but they bounced right back with a great effort. I think they're just scratching the surface, and I think they're really playing for each other. There's always been individuals that look like they're playing for themselves. On that Russian team, but there seems to be a great chemistry. I mean, he even put them in the Karelia Cup in the adult pro tournament about a month ago, and they won the Karelia Cup with the World Junior team playing against men. So they know how to win. And again, I think Igor is not only is he going to get the best out of that group, but I think when the time is right, he's going to be an excellent National Hockey League coach.
Amirov looked good again for Russia. How excited should Leaf fans be about this kid?
Well, I mean, Jim Pelefito for me, I mean, he's Mr. Russia. I mean, I call him Pelefito. I don't think you can have too many Russians on your team in National Hockey League. You have to have a balance, but the ones that he's gone after have been stars and studs. You've got Blakey coming on, Rob Blake. I mean, every team has a different philosophy on Russians. I know even when we had Dean Lombardi, the 1 year we had Tarasenko much higher in our list, but we were concerned about drafting Russians that high, with the concern whether they were going to, you know, hold you at liberty. There was a little bit of, you know, our feet were a little cold still from the Slava Voynov. What had happened, but mm-hmm. This kid's a stud. He's a stud. And again, his skill level's off the charts. And kudos to Jim Pelefito for not only does he know the players and their skills and their abilities, but he knows them. He's in, just as we in North America get in the homes with these families and know their parents and their upbringing, he gets in the homes with their families and knows their background, so he knows what he's getting from a character standpoint as well as a talent standpoint.
Okay, and you say that Russia could be Canada's biggest threat, and Canada's going to have to get past Finland tonight, and the Leafs, I think, have three prospects on that Finnish team, if I'm not mistaken, but the Finnish team, again, is just, they're so workmanlike, and look, last night's game, like it's happened throughout this tournament, where you're looking at the dominant nations, and they're pummeling the nations that you expect them to pummel, and Slovakia losing 6-0 to the Finns last night was not a surprise. But what kind of game is Canada in for tonight? I mean, after hitting double digits for the second time in three games, blanking Switzerland, you know, Quentin Byfield, a guy that you know well, of course, the number two overall pick, who's a Los Angeles King, and basically had, I think, just two assists in 9 career World Junior games coming in, went off for 6 points, and you know, Canada and the Finns clashed in the semis last year in the Czech Republic, and it was over pretty early, and Canada was up 3-0 before the 4-minute mark of the first period, and then they ended up winning 5-0. What can we expect tonight from this Finnish team?
Well, I think the Finnish team, I mean, obviously Lundell's a top-notch player, but I mean, talking to Christian Ruutu about the team, he thought they left, like they really went with a team oriented. He thought they left some pretty skilled players at home, which the Finland team, they pretty much give you everything, the same game every night. They play hard, they get in your face, they play dirty, they play a little bit more of a North American style. They don't give up. But I don't know whether, I mean, I think for Finland, if we're talking about Finland winning, we're going to be talking about their goaltender being the best player on the ice. And I mean, if it's Tapanen, I'm just not sure whether he's in the past, there's been some If Canada's going to get beaten by anybody, we're going to be talking about the other team's goalie. And okay. At some point, and that's why Askarov, when we talk about, I think that the Russian goalie has a chance to stand on his head and be that guy that spoils the party. Somebody else in the past has always, when Canada's, you're talking about the other team's goaltender because Canada's so stacked. But I think this Finnish team's going to be in tough. I think they're going to try and play, keep it at 5-on-5 as much they can. And then try and get a power play and get a power play goal. Like they're not going to open it up. They can't play that style. And Canada is now going to get their first test. I mean, I know Andre Tourigny very well. I know the team that Alan Miller's put together, but I find that this, it's just so hard when you're, first of all, they didn't have a lot of exhibition games to gel. They haven't been tested. I think, they get very slow. They look very sloppy at times because of their playing. I mean, they're just so dominant. Like, it almost looked like they felt sorry for themselves playing a game. Like, in Germany, like, they didn't want to celebrate. It was just such, and Germany was so short-staffed, and good on them for coming back the way they have. But that goaltending was so bad in that German game that they got into some bad habits that rolled over, I think, into the next game, where they weren't at their best. And then, you know, they looked better. This is a step now. They're starting to get down to the real grits where they're playing against teams that can match their grit and intensity. Probably can't match the blend of talent and intensity that Canada has. But at some point, Levi is going to be tested as well. And hopefully they've clearly made the statement he's their number one guy. And he's going to have to start making some saves soon.
Speaking of the Germans, and before we get a little deeper into Canada in the next few minutes here, but Tim Stützle, I mean, the guy is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, the one thing I would say, though, because, I mean, obviously, I mean, I'm following, you got nothing to do but read and watch, people being the old Byfield-Stützle decision that Rob Blake and the Canadians had. Stützle has been playing against men, and it's a huge factor. I mean, they talk about that, the college factor. He's also almost a full calendar year older than Quentin Byfield. But you can't deny it's you're probably picking what you just felt your organization needed the best, because Ottawa is getting an absolute stud. And I think, like, Quentin, when you look at him, when he takes his helmet off, he still looks like a baby. So you're probably looking at a guy that's going to be 20 pounds heavier. And that also takes an adjustment for the body when you play that kind of style. So I was a huge Stützle fan, but I felt that the Kings were going a little too European, and the fact that there's a Canadian player sitting right there for them to grab, that was going to happen. And I know you've mentioned it as well. When you think of what Quentin Byfield's going to have, he's going to have the professor of centerman and Anze Kopitar there to teach him how to play at all ends of the rink. And it's like, again, he's going to have an Ivy League on both ends of the rink as his mentor. And so when Kopi's ready to slide down, and that's not be for at least 4 or 5 years before he drops at a number one status, but Quentin's going to be so much more polished, having had to learn under the tutelage of Anze Kopitar.
All right, so the Canadians continue to get contributions offensively from all kinds of players, Quentin being the latest guy. You know, Dylan Cousins did it with his 6-point effort against Germany. Tomasino, as I mentioned the other day, comes from being on the fourth line and a little bit of an afterthought to a primetime player. Byfield does it against the Swiss team. The Finns have gotten better, though, with every game, right? And as you said, they beat a shorthanded German team 5-3. They knocked off Switzerland, and then they pounced the Slovakians. But I have to think that this is one of those games that the Canadians, knowing the history of Finland versus Canada on all international levels, are going to be incredibly revved up. How much of a factor, Michael, is the fact that these guys, I keep forgetting that no one's played hockey for 9 months. I keep forgetting that, right? And on this level. And I was texting with Peter Svoboda, who now runs Lausanne in the Swiss league. And then we jumped on the phone, and I was kidding with him, saying, the Swiss team would play a lot better with you as the coach. And then, of course, you know, he chimed in with his thoughts. But then he reminded me of that. And how much of a factor is the fact that most of these kids have not played real hockey for that long a period of time?
It's huge. I mean, I was out in Oshawa with a good friend of mine, Rocco Tullio, and Roger Hunt, watching a skate there. And it's again, Joy, you know the difference between playing for real. And that's like the NHL teams that are going to go playing for real. Like, I mean, you're now dialing it up to a different standard. I mean, Cole Perfetti was on the ice at the skate, and, you know, you're going end-to-end, nobody's stopping, you change 5-minute shifts, and then all of a sudden to be thrust into, you know, and then they have a 2-week quarantine. It's crazy. And I mean, the players in Europe have been playing a ton, but then they have to travel overseas. And the it factor too, for, and you've seen it firsthand, one of the incredible feelings about when you Canada hosts is coming out to 18,000 screaming fans. And these guys, when you're down, the fans, like, I remember being in Ottawa scouting a game and just having my Canadian flag waving when Tavares scored, you know, in Ottawa in that overtime goal against Russia. It's just like, it's the fans. Like, if you're down, the fans bring you back in. So now if you get down, you've got to really internalize this and come together as a team to bring yourself back up, because you don't have that sixth man or that extra attacker that the Canadian fans bring to the table. So it is another challenge for them. But I think certain players haven't given their best yet, and I think the more they play, the more their timing is going to be, because there's no question. Like, Cole Perfetti, he's an absolute stud. Tomasino is an absolute stud who I think is going to continue to roll and make people. I mean, there's no surprise for people that watch Tomasino play with Niagara and the Oshawa Generals that he's an absolute stud. And he's just bringing it to the table. But other guys, I think, still are chipping between their B and C game, and they're going to have to bring their A game when they start playing against these top teams that have been playing at a higher level for longer. Even though they're more talented, these other teams are more game ready.
We only got about a minute here, Mike, but I want to get a quick rundown of the other game tonight, the other big game. Not that anybody's really going to be watching. I mean, they'll watch after, but it'll be kind of anticlimactic to a degree. But Sweden against the USA, Sweden coming off that, you know, that game last night, which was a disappointment for them, a major disappointment, and the USA has been rolling. What do you anticipate tonight?
I like the States. I think the States are like, Sweden's going to play them hard, but I think, Spencer Knight's got to come into his own. I think he's a better goaltender than the Swedish goaltender. But I just think the States, this is the kind of game, I think their power play is going to be hot. They've got some guys that are starting to click as well that are, I mean, like the kid, the Zegras, is just an absolute pleasure to watch. Like, there's so many Patrick Kane tendencies in his game that they're fun to watch. It'll be a good game. I mean, I still think Canada's the team to beat. I think U.S. will give them headaches. I think Russia could give them headaches. Outside of that, I can't see another team. Can't see another team being there. And I love, because we don't have a lot of time, I loved your analogy. You brought your Italian ball hockey analogy out, where you want them to play games, and then it's like you go to the provincials, you're allowed to pick up two guys off the island to bring them to the national championships.
Wasn't that great?
Oh, my God. I love the fact that usually LaGuardia, he agrees with everything, and he couldn't even buy into that one.
No, I know. Hey, that's why I do it on purpose. You know that. So thanks a lot for this, Mike.
I know you do.
I'll talk to you soon.
Happy New Year, bud, and I love your Marianne analogy, too. You're the best, bud.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, pal. We'll talk to you soon. That is Mike Fiuta. Always a pleasure to have him on the program. You can follow him on Twitter, at Fiuta44LA. Tons of incredible insight. One of the best assessors of talent that I've ever come across in dealing with people that have worked in the National Hockey League. We're going to take the break and come back. And someone who assesses words and puts them together for your enjoyment has some insight on the signing of Zdeno Chara to the Washington Capitals. We'll discuss when we come back on Writer's Block. It is New Year's Eve. I'm Joey Vendetta. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Writer's Block. It is New Year's Eve, 2021. The eve where the calendar changes, thankfully. Still to come on the program, we will speak to Los Angeles Kings general manager and legend Rob Blake, whom, of course, has the most prospects for the second year in a row in the World Junior Championships. He'll join us in the back half of hour number three. John Clayton, NFL insider from 710 ESPN, as we preview the final weeks in the NFL season, week 17. And it is going to be interesting, to say the least. Ryan Fitzpatrick is out after a positive test, COVID test. He's out. Fitzmagic is Fitzcovid. We'll also be joined by Ryan Callahan. Had a great career in the National Hockey League. Left it out on the ice. And one of those guys who just played with reckless abandon. He'll join us in hour number two. Mark Berman from the New York Post will preview the Raptors tonight, trying to get off the schneid. And they've got some problems they have to address, and hopefully they can do it against New York. But right now, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome a fine weaver of words, a spinner of syntax for the Washington Post, at Samantha J. Pell on Twitter. It is my pleasure to welcome Washington Capitals beat reporter Samantha Pell to the program. Samantha, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. It's New Year's Eve, and we're asking the question, do you have any resolutions? So does Samantha Pell have any resolutions for New Year's Eve?
Ooh, you know, I haven't even thought about my resolutions. I honestly forgot that it was New Year's Eve. So, no, I actually don't. I guess my biggest thing, I couldn't even tell you. Honestly, I'm so wrapped up in all this Capitals and hockey stuff. I think everyone's just really excited to have hockey back. So, Yeah, nothing from me so far. I guess I have to think of that right before midnight.
Well, I like the fact that you don't know, you didn't know it was New Year's Eve, because as I've said, the whole time-space continuum during the COVID thing has been a challenge for many people. But like me, have you been in your pajamas for the last 6 or 7 months?
Oh, I've definitely added a lot of sweatpants, sweatshirts to the wardrobe. It's going to be really different having to go back to the rink, putting some real clothes on. But yeah, definitely comfort has been the number one thing here in COVID times.
You know what? I want to ask you a question, because I just had a buddy of mine, Mike Feud, on, who was assistant general manager for the LA Kings. And we were talking about back in the day, we played men's league hockey, and he used the term chicks, but not in a belittling way, just in a way that you used to use it back in the day. But is that a term that now you would consider as a female offensive? Because I know a lot of women who still like that term. They're okay. Hey, you're a chick. Like, or is that a completely inappropriate term to use for you?
I think, you know, everyone has differing opinions on that. I think for me personally, it doesn't offend me if anyone calls me that. I think it just depends on kind of how you grew up and what circles you kind of ran with. But no, for me, it doesn't seem that offensive. I mean, I think it's the same as girl. Obviously, I think if you just say woman, that's probably going to say the same thing. But no, right off the bat, it doesn't strike me as anything offensive.
Oh, yeah. I was curious to get your opinion, because it came from the term bird, right? I think that was a British term. It was like the birds, right? They used to call women birds. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of things that were acceptable. And now it's just everything's cancel culture. And I'm not sure what really, I guess, qualifies as cancellation clause sometimes, right? And so it's good to get other people's opinion. Okay, let's talk about cancellation in the sense that Zdeno Chara was canceled as the captain of the Boston Bruins after 14 years. And he pretty much left no doubt that this was a decision that was not his. It was a decision that came from Boston, and they said, hey, you're too old. And he's too old, but he's still pretty good, and he's a difference maker. Why did the Capitals, do you think, go after Chara? Or was this more of a good fit from a geographic point of view?
Yeah, you know, I think for the Capitals, I mean, we can even talk about them signing Henrik Lundqvist back in October. That was, you know, someone who they felt still had stuff left in the tank. They felt like he was a veteran acquisition who could really help them kind of push guys in the room. He looked like he was going to push the young goaltender Ilya Samsonov for that number one starting position in net this season. Obviously, he's not going to be playing this season with the Capitals due to his heart condition, and he's set to have open heart surgery soon. So I think after that kind of fell through with the Capitals were looking for another veteran addition to the room. And obviously Chara brings, you know, 14 years of being a captain in Boston. He has so much experience. He has so much to teach kind of these younger players that it seems like the Capitals wanted that extra veteran addition to this, you know, Capitals group that still has some stuff in them ready for, you know, a second cup under Ovechkin. So yeah, I think overall the Capitals were kind of looking for that veteran leadership. Obviously, Chara joins a very crowded blue line for the Capitals. This season, there's 9 defensemen on one-way contract so far with the Capitals. So obviously a lot of probably different combinations for the Capitals to try out in camp. But overall, I mean, I don't think Chara was signed by the Capitals to go on the taxi squad. So looks like he'll be playing a decently big role in Washington this season.
Yeah, and look, general manager Brian McClellan said in his statement, we're extremely pleased to have Zdeno join the organization because we feel his experience and leadership will strengthen our blue line and our team. Now, Z's entering his 23rd season, but I had Brian Burke on yesterday, and we both agreed. I've known Zdeno a long time. Brian agreed. And Zdeno is one of those guys who's a completely stand-up guy, a great human being, is a role model on multiple levels, not a guy who publicizes what he does off the ice, doesn't have, you know, the publicist letting you know his every move on the charitable front. He just does it and lets it happen, right? And I think the respect that Zdeno Chara commands, it's not just as a former Boston Bruin and a captain, but just as a human being, I think it cannot be overstated. And Capital defenseman Brendan Dillon was on our sister station in Vancouver, Sportsnet 650, and said, this guy is a legend of the game. The team's obviously getting better and better each day with just signings like this and showing how strongly the Capitals feel about this team. Where do you think the Capitals fit in terms of the new NHL alignment and the way that this season is going to play out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Capitals are in the toughest division, I think, so far, just in the East. You look at all the big names there. I mean, with the Bruins, the Flyers, Islanders, Rangers, Capitals, Penguins, all in one division going up for four playoff spots. I mean, I think it's going to be really intense there. And the addition of Chara, it just seems like only gives the Capitals that extra edge. I think maybe before, some people are a little skeptical, and maybe still are, about where the Capitals will fall in this division. I mean, they have a really young goaltender in net, Ilya Samsonov. It'll be his first time being in that starting position, and what's actually going to happen in front of him, we don't know yet. I think a lot rides on his shoulders and a lot rides on his performance to see how the Capitals do. So I don't think they're a lock for the playoffs by any means. I think it's going to be a really, really tough stretch. And I mean, look, they have to play all other seven teams eight times. That's a lot of games against Pittsburgh. That's a lot of games against Boston and a lot of games against the Flyers. So I think it's really up in the air at this point.
And that's not to mention a lot of games against the Islanders, who are no pushover, right? So it's
absolutely.
What do you think about the taxi squad that each team is going to have? Because as we just discussed with Mike Fiuta, who was just on, and we were talking about the World Juniors and how players have not had competitive hockey for months, and we don't know what's going to happen when it comes to the AHL. The OHL, the minor leagues are going to maybe play in February, but really don't know anything about the traditional sources of players to replace your injured players or to replace players that get sent down. There's no really sending down other than the taxi squad. What do you think of that scenario and how it plays in with the Capitals? What is their taxi squad, do you think, going to look like?
Yeah, I think it's super interesting to see how the Capitals utilize their taxi squad. I think especially with their defensemen, right? They have such a crowded blue line right now with all of these names. I mean, like John Carlson's obviously going to play with a Brendan Dillon and Orlov and Justin Schultz, Zdeno Chara. But then they have some of those younger guys like, you know, Jonas Siegenthaler and Martin Saravari. Those guys have to clear waivers to go on the taxi squad. And will they maybe be picked up by other teams? I'm not so sure, but that's definitely a possibility. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the Capitals utilize their taxi squad, to see if they're going to kind of shelve it with a bunch of extra defensemen. It's going to be forwards. Obviously, a third goalie is going to be on there. But, yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how different teams manage it. Maybe you bring up a guy who's really good on the PK one night or for a couple games, or good on the power play, and then switch him out. I think it's going to be a really interesting strategy and a really interesting twist to the season.
Yeah, and the Caps have 9 defensemen under one-way contracts available to start the season in Carlson, Orlov, Justin Schultz, Siegenthaler, Nick Jensen, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Paul Ledoux, Dillon, and Chara. And as you said, it's going to be interesting to see how those strings get pulled for every team, how they manage their salary cap. But signing Chara for only just under $800,000 lets the Capitals remain under the cap at $81.5 million when the season starts. Michael Kempney and Henrik Lundqvist will both be placed on LTIR, long-term injured reserve, which is going to clear up $4 million in cap space. So the Caps are in good shape that way, but managing 8 NHL defensemen, 8 really capable NHL defensemen, and having a guy like Chara in there probably is going to work to Chara's favor, because, you know, maybe you're not back-to-back. He's sitting against a team that maybe you don't need that physicality. You leave him off and you put somebody in there that can get some experience and then can spell him a bit. But when you know, I think when the chips are down and they go into the playoffs, I anticipate Zdeno Chara is going to play every game.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I don't think, again, Zdeno Chara does not come to Washington to sit on the bench, right? They signed him for a reason. He had other teams who were interested in him. He could have went back to Boston in a reserve role to not start every single game and not have that elevated factor, but he chose Washington. So obviously conversations were had there with Peter Laviolette about what he thinks is going to be, you know, his role in Washington. Obviously he said today there are no guarantees, you know, kind of continue that sentiment over and over, but it seems like he is going to play a big role in Washington one way or another. And I think a lot of it's going to come from that veteran experience being in the room.
So give us the vibe in Washington on Laviolette and the job that he has done Because Laviolette's a guy who comes in and has success in a hurry, generally speaking. Wherever he's gone, he comes in, things turn around quickly, and then after year three, a lot of the time, it's sayonara. And, you know, year three, year four, the act wears thin, like a lot of coaches. I'm not denigrating Laviolette. I think Laviolette is a great coach, and his track record, of course, speaks to that. But what is the vibe on Laviolette in D.C.?
Yeah, I think people are pretty high on him in D.C. so far, just because, you know, Brian McClellan did say that he wanted to get a coach that would hold players accountable. Someone that could come in and reset the team's culture, which Brian described as was kind of failing the last couple of years, you know, a phrase that I don't think any GM wants to say about his organization. So, yeah, I think they really wanted him to come in, push some players' buttons, make sure that, you know, they're all after the same goal. I think the Capitals' performance in the bubble last season just wasn't acceptable for anyone in the organization. So they needed a change, and they feel like Peter Laviolette is, you know, the guy who's going to do that for them.
Samantha, thank you very much for taking the time out of your New Year's Eve. And let me confirm for you once again, it is New Year's Eve. So get ready to make
sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of that. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for always being on the program. All the best to you and your family in 21. Take care, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Samantha Pell from the Washington Post here on Writer's Block on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're going to take the break and come back with some of your texts. What's your New Year's resolution? Do you have one? And if you're celebrating tonight, are you adhering to it's not the law, it's recommended? Is it just going to be you and your immediate circle? Are you going to pull a whole Airbnb, throw a crazy house party, and charge people at the door? I promise we won't trace you. Seriously. We'll discuss when we come back on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It is time now to get some texts in from the text line at 590-590. I do this always in the last segment. You can call 216-870-0590. We'll put you on the air. 888-666-0590. What is your New Year's resolution? And are you going to throw a shaker tonight? Or are you going to be one of those people who lives within the law? You know what that means. I don't know that it's the law, but we have a text from, let's see, where's this one, this conspiracy theory text? My hope for the New Year is for everyone else, including you guys on the radio, to finally wake up and see what this globalist agenda really is and how the pandemic is not actually real, but just excuse after excuse to steal our freedoms in the name of public health. You probably won't read this on the air, but I hope you at least see it. George in Toronto. Of course I read it on the air, George. Send another one. Mike from Mississauga. Ha ha, that Canucks text. Idiots, LOL. Yeah, someone texted me and said, Finland versus Canucks, are you feeling okay? And I called the Canadian World Junior team the Canucks, because on occasion, Canada is referred to as Canucks by people from other countries, mostly. Hey, you Canuck. Wait, is that cancel culture too? I know, as I sit here in my villa in St. Bart's, where I, of course, am sequestered prior to returning to Canada and quarantining for 14 days, that the term Canuck is a term of endearment. Those crazy Canucks. So this person from the 778 texts in and says, sorry, I've never heard Canucks in my life for Canada. My bad. Everyone is so East Coast biased. I'm surprised they ain't called the Leafs or the Canadians. Fair enough. Is there an East Coast bias? Yeah. You can hear the waves in the background. Oh, I got to go for a massage soon. Throwing a massive bonfire party. Go Bills, go. From the 289. I don't believe you. I think you're going to be in your house. Tony from the Hammer always chiming in. My New Year's resolution to reach out to my fellow man and cheer them up with friendly, positive words. My home will just be me tonight. No friends or family coming over. My old man, who's an 88-year-old Italian, is not hearing it. He doesn't understand why we're all not coming over. He just can't comprehend it. I try to explain it. Dad, there's this thing, gets people sick, kills them. I know. But what are we having for lunch tomorrow? Jesus. Mac from Saskatchewan, when you gamble and lose, you have to pay the price. Masai gambled and let Ibaka and Gasol leave the cap space for the Greek freak. No kidding. Now the Raptors will have a throwaway season. Well, we'll see what happens tonight. We'll get into that when we return on Writer's Block with Mark Berman, the New York Knicks NBA reporter from the New York Post. My name is Joey Vendetta, and this is the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the New Year's Eve edition of Writer's Block. My name is Joey Vendetta. It is my pleasure to have you as part of the listening experience today, wherever you may be. Our highlights today, as I sit here in fabulous St. Bart's, enjoying a piña colada, virgin, of course. Nothing like a good virgin. Caesar, pina colada, whatever. Apparently, the finance minister of the province that many of us reside in is no longer employed. Because apparently, he thought it was a good idea to go on vacation while the rest of us are being told it's a terrible idea to go on vacation. And what this proves to us, once again, is that there are, I was going to say two sets of rules, but there are really three sets of rules. There's the rules for us. There's a rule for them. And then there's another set of rules for the people that control it all. But anyway, this guy, it's not about that you went. And say you were stupid enough to get caught. I don't want you in charge of anything. You can't even cheat properly. Period. End of story. Sayonara, arrivederci, ciao. And not bello, just ciao. The NBA is going to reportedly require players, staffers, and others to wear contact tracing sensors. The federal government has approved the National Hockey League camps, but the provinces must decide on the games. Michael Richardson, member of the 1985 Chicago Bears Super Bowl champion team, where many skits like Saturday Night Live's The Bears emanated from, this guy's apparently facing murder charges. Terrible way to end the year. Even worse way to start 2021, buddy. And Sweden's remarkable 54-game unbeaten streak at the World Juniors snapped by Russian machine never breaks. I love the Russian team because I love Igor Larionov, the coach. He's done such a wonderful job. I got to try and figure out how to get him on the show. It is now my pleasure to welcome to the program from a fine publication in the Big Apple, I would say a legendary publication on many levels. This man spins a tapestry of wordery, and I'm using that word loosely, that you've never read before. His name, of course, is Mark Berman, at @NYPost_Berman, New York Knicks NBA reporter. Mark, thanks for being on the program. How are you today?
Hey, Joey. Thanks for having me on, and have a happy New Year.
Well, at least you know it's New Year. My last guest, Samantha Pell from the Washington Post, she didn't know it was New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it's been a crazy 2020, so you might have gotten lost. But, yeah, it's going to be finally over in 10 hours. I lost track already.
Yeah, well, I've seen
11 hours. Yeah.
See, she doesn't know what day it is. You don't know what time it is. It's okay. We're all kind of in this.
We're on the same boat.
Yes. So the Toronto Raptors are in a spot that They haven't been in a very, very, very long time. Back in 2005, 2006, they started 0-6. That team was an absolute disaster. No one is suggesting that this Toronto Raptor team is going to be anywhere close to what that team was. But going into tonight's New Year's Eve matchup in New York at the Garden with the 500 New York Knicks, and that is some sort of an achievement for the Knicks, the Raptors are, I'm not going to say in tough, but the pressure is squarely on the Raptors. What type of team are the Raptors facing against the Knicks tonight? Julius Randle looks, I'm not going to say revitalized, but, you know, as a guy that I knew when I saw him break his leg horribly when he played in Los Angeles, and I just went, man, that's one of those injuries. That was kind of like a Paul George injury, even though it wasn't publicized. What does he look like so far, and what does the rest of this team look like?
Well, first of all, the game is in Florida. So, okay.
It's a home game.
We're in Tampa Bay. I'm not there, unfortunately. We were joking around with all the beat writers saying, boy, we could be in Tampa. And they're like, no, we'd actually, without a pandemic, we'd be in Toronto. But, listen, Julius Randle has been spectacular. He's had a dark cloud over his head pretty much his whole prior six seasons. He's been on six terrible teams. The Lakers were brutal when he was there. Then he went to the Pelicans during the Anthony Davis fiasco, and they were terrible. And last season, his first as a Knick, the Knicks were terrible. And Randle comes in with a $60 million contract and was a little disappointing. His numbers looked decent from last season, where he averaged about 19 and 9. His turnovers were legendary. He would be dribbling into triple teams and coughing up the ball. So far, it's been a different story. He came back in such great shape. He was working out during the pandemic in his hometown of Dallas. He just looks like a different player. He's able to grab a rebound and race down court and beat the opponents down court and dish to his teammates. And he's playing smarter, he's fitter, and he's putting up monster numbers. He's even shooting well from the three-point line.
And if you look at the way this team is constructed, that being the Knicks, and the Knicks being in Tampa, I guess that's probably preferred for them than being in New York tonight. At least they get some sunshine. But as you said, Randle's been on a tear. But the guy that everyone's looking to carry this Knicks team into the future is R.J. Barrett. And R.J. Barrett is off to an incredible start, of course, of particular interest because he's a local guy here in Canada from Mississauga, Ontario. He's averaging 16.5 points a game, 7.5 boards, almost 4 assists per game. But he isn't the most efficient player, and I have to think that that will come more with experience. But Tom Thibodeau, the head coach, seems to be pretty impressed so far with R.J.
Yeah, he's happy. I mean, it's another thing. Like, he loves to play in Toronto and doesn't get that chance tonight or the rest of the season, most likely. But, so R.J. did not make either of the two all-rookie teams last season. He was very disappointed, came into camp saying it's going to motivate him, and he looks motivated. And he's playing a lot more efficiently. Listen, he's still shooting under 40%. He had a couple of bad shooting nights so far. But Thibodeau was saying yesterday on Zoom that he's not shooting well, but he's really helping us. He's driving the ball, distributing it, drawing double teams and hitting the open man, rebounding, playing very good defense. He does a lot of things, a lot of intangibles. That's why I was shocked that he didn't make the at least the second team all-rookie. I think one of the Raptors kids, Terrence Davis, may have made it. And I think in New York, we were very surprised. But listen, his free throw shooting is better. His three-point shot still is off. But he was a terrible free throw shooter at Duke and his rookie year. So that's a big improvement with a little change of a technique. I think we're looking at a player who, if the Knicks are winning in a couple of years, I think he'll be in an all-star conversation. I really do believe he has that potential because he does so many things on the court, and he's just tough to stop going to the basket.
Tonight, as far as injuries go, what kind of lineup are the Knicks going to trot out? It looks like they have some injury issues, and some of them are day-to-day, but Raptors aren't going to see, from what I can tell, the best Knicks lineup.
Yeah, well, they have injuries, but mostly to their rookies and a couple of their newcomers. The irony is their starting five that has been the unit since day one, they're all five guys from last season with Barrett and Mitchell Robinson and Randall and Reggie Bullock's in the starting lineup and Elbert mm-hmm. Tate. And so they're healthy. But, you know, all the newcomers that we're so excited about, their lottery pick, Obi Toppin out of Dayton, and Emmanuel Quickley, the point guard out of Kentucky, they've been hurt since the opener. And Toppin's out for probably 2-3 weeks with a calf strain. And Quickley, who really looked good in preseason, he's probably not going to play tonight. They may get back one of their top free agent signees, Austin Rivers. He may make his debut, but he admitted on Zoom this morning, you know, he hasn't really practiced, and they're going to play him limited minutes, and he's going to be extremely rusty. He missed all of preseason and the first four regular season games. So they're really beat up. Thibodeau won with an 8-man rotation in Cleveland the other night, and it worked. They won the game.
And that's a pretty tight rotation. Look, the Raptors have had their share of trouble this year, but is Dennis Smith Jr. going to be available? Because he's apparently been dealing with an injury as well.
Yeah, he's out. He didn't even make the trip.
Yeah. Okay.
He has a bruised quad this time. I mean, this guy has been injured pretty much ever since the Knicks traded for him. It was a big trade, the one in which they dealt Kristaps Porzingis, and Dennis Smith Jr. was sort of the centerpiece, along with cap space. You know, the cap space we all thought would net Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Instead, it netted Julius Randle and Elfrid Payton. And right now, Randle is playing at a very high level, while Porzingis has not yet made his season debut, also an injury-prone player. But Dennis Smith Jr. has been a giant disappointment. They tried to trade in this offseason. No market value at all for him, and they'd love to still trade him. I just don't know what you're getting back.
What happened with Dennis Smith Jr., man? Because for a minute there, he was going to be the next guy, and then it didn't happen.
Yeah, he was getting even triple doubles. In fact, his last game in Dallas, for Dallas, was against the Knicks, and he posted a triple double, and the Knicks traded for him the next day. Injuries has been a factor, but listen, his basketball IQ, in terms of being a point guard, there's a lot more than being athletic. He's super athletic. You know, there was one coach, his coach in college at North Carolina State, when I was doing preview stories before the draft, he said this guy has the athleticism of Russell Westbrook. Problem is, when you're a point guard, you need intelligence. You need a basketball IQ, knowing how to run the offense, where the open man is, who's hot, you know, where to swing the ball when you're under pressure. He doesn't have any of that instincts. And, you know, Thibodeau tried him in game two. He didn't look good, and then he got hurt. So it's just been a nightmare, and it just shows. It's like these lottery picks, they're still gambles. I mean, in the one-and-done era, he was a one-and-done in North Carolina State. You just don't know what you're going to get sometimes, and Dennis Smith is turning into a big draft bust.
Okay, so the Raptors being 0-3, they have been – They can't close. They haven't been able to close. And the Knicks at 2-2, it's early. You know, but you got Kyle Lowry saying this is a must-win game for the Raptors tonight in Tampa. It's a home game, whatever that means for the Raptors being in a form. I mean, it is what it is, right? But they're off to such a terrible start. They've blown double-digit leads in all three losses, and they rank dead last in offense. And there are a ton of problems, but you've got a guy in Pascal Siakam who is an all-star, but the pressure is squarely on him now because there's no more Gasol, there's no more Ibaka, but the Raptors struggled against Joel Embiid the other night because their inside defense was was, I'm not going to say non-existent, but was incredibly questionable. And then they, and then Siakam had five fouls in the last 6 minutes, I think, and fouled out. How do the Knicks do in the paint? What do you think that matchup's going to be like?
Yeah, well, Randall's been very good in the paint, but I'm not totally shocked. We did a questionnaire in our NBA preview, and they asked us which team may not be as good as we all expect, and I said the Raptors, because a Gasol and a Ibaka are the two big man role-playing pieces that have been so valuable for the Raptors. They don't win the title without them. The other factor, I really thought playing in Tampa Bay was going to be a bad situation. I know when the Knicks go to Toronto, the fans are amazing. I cover the NBA Finals. The fans are amazing. It's been a tremendous home court advantage against Atlantic Division teams. They had a big streak going. The lack of fans, I think, hurts them. They have a really nice home court situation. So, you know, the fact that they have to adjust to not having those two guys, you know, I thought was going to be a big deal. And now Van Vliet, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but I knew that Van Vliet, after you signed a big contract, there's a little more pressure on you. You're more of a target. Everyone read about, you know, going into free agency, Fred Van Vliet, the best point guard on the market. So you're no longer flying anywhere under the radar. You are front and center. So I think the Knicks can, you know, if they continue to shoot well from the three-point line, which they have been so far, I think the Knicks could give the Raptors a game. The Knicks have been humiliated in the last two seasons when they've flown to Toronto, and they're happy to be in Tampa. I mean, listen, no one's happy why they're in Tampa, but they have a better chance of winning.
And last question before I let you go, and our guest is Mark Berman, New York Knicks NBA reporter for the New York Post, is that the Raptors are last in free throw attempts at 13.7 a game. They've been outshot by a pretty big margin by their opponents, and that's something that isn't going to resolve unless you take more free throws, right? And they've had barely any free throws this season. Where are the Knicks, and what are they like from the charity stripe?
Yeah, last season they were one of the worst in the league. Yeah. We did a whole story on talking to some free throw shooting coaches about the Knicks. That's how bad they were last season. Barrett was one of the worst offenders. This year they're on the at the top. They're shooting over 80%. Thibodeau is just in my opinion, he's one of the best coaches in the game because he prepares them and he knows what's important. And getting to the free throw line is so important. You don't get, you know, the big contracts by being an 80% free throw shooter, but that's how you win games. And Toronto was a good free throw shooting team when they won the title, and you got to draw fouls. That's one thing that Barrett is very good at, which is why his improved free throw shooting is such a key, because he gets to the line, and the Raptors are going to have to improve there, getting more chances and hitting them. I mean, again, you don't get the max contracts by being an 80% free throw shooter, but it is a key, you know, to a playoff team.
Mark, thank you very much for your time. All the best to you and yours for a safe, healthy, and happy 2021. And I'm glad at least you knew that it was New Year's Eve.
I did remember, and I hope to be in Toronto at some point soon, sooner than later.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear that how much you appreciate Toronto. Thanks again for doing this. That is Mark Berman, New York Knicks NBA reporter. It is Joey Vendetta. You are listening to the Sportsnet Radio Network. This is Writer's Block, and we're going to get to some more of your texts later on this hour on maybe your New Year's resolutions. But if you're a Raptor fan, if you are a Raptor supporter from anywhere, I want to hear from you. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590. Or *590 on your cell phone. Are you concerned about what this Toronto Raptor team looks like? And do you think that this is going to be a problem going forward? Are you concerned? The loss of Ibaka is bigger than we thought. We knew it was going to be an issue. And Marc Gasol, of course, didn't have nearly as much in the tank, but looks good on the Lakers so far. Of course, his minutes can be spelled, and he can be load managed, to use that term that we probably never want to hear again. But the Raptors are struggling in the third quarter. And the phone lines are open. 416-870-0590 on this New Year's Eve. 1-888-666-0590 or star 590 on your cell phone. Call me. We'll put you on the radio. What do you think ails the Toronto Raptors? And are the New York Knicks tonight a tonic for that? Think about this. The Raptors have been outscored in the third quarter in their games this season against the Pelicans, 38-22. That's a huge disparity. The Spurs, it was closer. It was just 2 points, 30-28. Sixers, 28-22. They squandered leads and gave up leads in all those quarters. And I know that there's still plenty of time left in the game. But the minute Kyle Lowry leaves, things fall apart. And that's a problem because that wasn't the case before. Norm checks in and everything's okay. That hasn't been the case this year. Are you concerned that this is not a trend, but a fact? Call us. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590. Star 590 on your Rogers cell phone. And don't forget, New York Knicks at Toronto Raptors tonight at 7:30 on Sportsnet. And of course, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Roger Lajoie has the pregame and halftime show. Coverage gets going at 7 o'clock. Brad Fay and Sherman Hamilton have pregame coverage on Sportsnet TV at 7 o'clock. Smith and Jones with the radio call. Matt Devlin and Leo Routens on Sportsnet. I'm concerned. And the reason I'm concerned is the reliance on Kyle Lowry. Mark Mano from Barrie, who says he's having some neighbors over. They live on the same street. Our kids are in the same class. Suck your lockdown. And he says he's very concerned. I don't think we have a closer. I really like Siakam, but I've never thought of him as a number one. Is Siakam a number one? It's a good question. I mean, they pay him like he is. I just think that every time Kyle Lowry subs out, the wheels fall off. Kyle's 35. Against the Pelicans, subs out. They go on a run. And the Raptors miss a bunch of threes. OG, who looked okay last game. I think he had 20. Norm, Fred VanVleet, they miss a bunch. They're not hitting threes. Toronto was a team, I think the hallmark of this Raptor team was that they could take a punch. They could take a punch. And as bad as that punch was, they would come back from the punch. They had the character. They had the swag. I mean, they had the ability to take a knockout punch and not get knocked out. I don't see that this year. I see them taking body blows and jabs, to use boxing analogies, and not being able to come back. They don't get knocked out in the fight, but they lose the fight on points. That's what's happening. And I think that that's going to be a problem going forward, because if you keep relying on Kyle Lowry, who at some point is going to run out of gas, even though the guy is the greatest Raptor of all time. You know, you look at the Spurs game, Lowry checks out with a one-point lead. He's out for 3 or 4 minutes, whatever it was. And the only field goal is a dunk after Norm Powell misses a shot. And the Spurs score 7. Raptors aren't playing well defensively, a hallmark of this team. And Norm Powell is a problem, a major problem. Norm Powell is a bricklayer right now. And I'm related to some bricklayers. And as long as you're doing it on a construction site, I'm okay with you. I'll mix the cement. I'll get the trowel. I'll push the wheelbarrow. I'll hand you the brick. But when you're shooting 4 from 23 from the field and has been a minus in every game, that's a bit of a problem, Norm. Especially when we know what Norman Powell can be. And you have to have faith as a Raptor fan that we're going to see the Norm Powell that would come into games. Let's go to Mark in Barrie. Mark, welcome. You're on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Thank you so much for listening. Happy New Year's Eve 2021. How are you today?
I'm good. Happy New Year's to you as well and everyone listening.
So Pascal Siakam, in your opinion, isn't the guy to lead this Raptor team to the promised land again?
I don't believe so. I like his skill set. I think he's got the good energy, but I don't see him as a closer. He still looks a little rough around the edges, to my eye test, when he's playing, you know. So I think we need more of a solidified shot maker, take the ball in high-pressure situation and do what he's got to do. And I don't think he's there yet.
Thanks a lot for the call. I'm looking at the fact that Masai Ujiri and the Raptor organization, Bobby Webster, Nick Nurse, they all signed off on Pascal. And when we have the real Pascal Siakam and the rest of the cylinders are firing in the engine, he's fine. But if any of the other cylinders are sputtering and he's anything less than an all-star, it's a problem. Let's go to Rob from Toronto. Rob, you are on the Sportsnet Radio Network. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Doing well. Happy New Year's Eve to you. So do you think the Raptors are in trouble here, or is this just an early season wobble and the ship's going to get righted?
You know what? I don't think it's either or. I think they got a bunch of guys that are going to – we're going to see what Coach Nurse is about. I'm excited to see what these young guns are going to do. They got some big shoes to fill. And there's a whole lot of like roles that are brand new to these guys. They've had to fill the shoes temporarily, and now it's theirs to wear. I'm not worried. I mean, we can't continue, you know, constantly being sitting near the top. I think you know, we're gonna go through a little bit of growing pains, but I'm more intrigued to see what Coach Nurse can do with these guys.
Thanks very much for the call and a happy New Year. Let's go to Eddie in Toronto. Eddie, you are on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Happy New Year's Eve 2021 to you. How are you doing today?
Happy New Year's Eve to you too, Vendetta. Look, this market our market, Toronto basketball market, we cannot get free agents to come here, top free agents. We banked a lot, I think, in the back of our minds of trying to get Giannis to come here after his contract is up after this year. And that didn't happen. He signed 5 years in Milwaukee. I'm worried. I was worried when Kawhi left, because when Kawhi came, I had told everybody we're going to win the title this year. That's it. And then he left, and now we're back to being this team of a bunch of role players, albeit some decent role players. But what Bobby Webster and Masai understand, but I guess maybe they won't say, is that this market cannot draw top free agents. They do not want to come here. They do not want to play here. So the only way to get them is through trade. And if you have assets, OG, I don't know about Siakam right now, but Freddie, these are guys that teams would want to have these guys. And if you want to get a top free agent and make a splash and make a run, you do that. But other than that, there's no free agent. When's the last time? I think it was Hedo Turkoglu was the last top free agent, big name, that actually signed here. Other than that, nobody comes here. So
no, it's a good point. Look, you make a great point. I got to ask you this question before we let you go. We've only got about half a minute here, but I ask you this question. Do you think Toronto has deluded itself into thinking that it is a much more attractive destination to NBA free agents than it actually is?
Absolutely. I'm a lifelong Torontonian. I'm born and raised here, and I know the real deal, and you do too. They don't want to come here. They will not come here, and it's just a reality that we have to accept. you can't change it. Make trades, get some big names. That's it. Happy New Year. Thank you for taking my call.
That's a great call, and I think it's a point that's well taken. Did we put too many eggs in the Giannis basket? And then Rudy Gobert signs too. So what are you going to do next year? It's a good question. We're going to take the break, come back. And speaking of Tampa, this gentleman does not play basketball, but he left his heart in Tampa and New York and just retired. We will talk to him when we return on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back. This is Writer's Block. Still to come in the next hour, Rob Blake will join us, general manager of the LA Kings, World Junior Championships. Of course, the Kings have the most prospects in the tournament. Tonight, Canada, Finland, 6 o'clock Eastern. Sweden, USA, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Should be a couple of really solid matchups. So we'll talk to Rob then, and of course, John Clayton, NFL insider, 710 ESPN Seattle, will join us at the top of the next hour, and we will chat with him about Week 17 in the National Hockey League. But it is now my pleasure to welcome a guy, as I said before we got him on the phone, who really, I always admired the way he played. Because he was one of those guys that, you know, they use the word that he's an honest player. He gives an honest effort, leaves it all out on the ice. And I think the next gentleman really embodies that. It is my pleasure to welcome the pride of Rochester, New York, Ryan Callahan, to the program. Ryan, thanks very much for doing this. How are you today?
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for the very kind words there. Very, very kind to you. But thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on. I first have to ask you, since we're in World Junior time, what was your experience like back in, I think it was 2005? You guys finished out of the money, but I'm sure it's something that you definitely remember.
We did, yeah, and we were lucky enough to be on U.S. soil in North Dakota, and Canada won it that year. They had the, I think it was the Dream Team, they called it, or whatever it was. That team was just absolutely stacked. But yeah, it was an unbelievable experience. Just my first experience representing the USA on a stage like that, and to be able to represent your country at such a young age. Really, you're still a young man. It was so exciting. The attention on the tournament, like I said, being in the U.S. Was even more special for me playing for the U.S. team. So I just remember it being a really good time, a really good tournament, and. You know, it's such a big thing now, and especially in Canada as well. It's like a national holiday.
Let's talk about what I don't think a lot of people understand. And I lived in the U.S. for 20 years. I have a ton of friends, you know, skated with Pat Brisson, a bunch of agents, tons of friends in the hockey business. And I got exposed to a lot of guys that played college hockey. And It's different in Canada, right? The college game in Canada is not even anywhere near on a par to what it is in the U.S., unfortunately. But the systems are different, and there are pros and cons, and we don't need to get into those as it stands right now. But what is the difference, in your estimation, between someone who – and you came up – you played for the Guelph Storm, so you played in the – you know, you played in the junior system. You didn't play in the college system, but I'm sure you come across a ton of guys and watch the college game. What's the difference between coming up in the junior system versus coming up in the college system? And the college system has become a much more, not only acceptable, but in some levels, an attractive alternative.
Yeah, and I think they each have their pros, they each have their cons. For me, when I was going through it, I was always kind of drawn to the major junior style of hockey. Back then it was a little bit more physical. It kind of suited my game a little bit more. I really enjoyed how it was a 68-game schedule at that time. You know, everything was kind of focused around hockey where, you know, the college route, you know, you got school obviously involved in there. You're not playing as many games, you know, not as many times during the week. There's a lot of practice time, a lot of time in the gym. You kind of see, you know, when I came out of major juniors and, you know, I had buddies that played in college hockey and you'd see the college guys in the summer too. And, they just seemed like the college guys definitely spent a lot more time in the weight room than the major junior guys did. And you could see that from their physique and everything else. But for me, my choice was made kind of easy. I always kind of liked major junior hockey, but to be honest, I never got any college offers, scholarship offers at the time I had to make my choice of going major junior or going to college. I did a couple visits to a couple of different schools, but nobody came around and offered me a scholarship. So it made my decision pretty easy, but both routes are good. And, you know, people and parents have asked me before, you know, what do you prefer? What do you choose? And, you know, I think it's based on the family and it's based on the kid. And if you're good enough to make it to the NHL or if you're good enough to make it to pro, you're going to do it out of both ways. I don't think there's a better way to, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say major junior is going to produce more NHL players or colleges. I think if you're good enough to make it to that next level, the development in both leagues are so good now. Coaching is so good that you'll make it there if you deserve to be there.
Our guest is Ryan Callahan, announcing his announcement after a fantastic career in the National Hockey League. And before we get into your NHL career, you played internationally. You played in 2010 and 2014, represented your country. But 2010 is the year I want to talk about. I was at that game. I was actually sitting in a box with Pat Brisson. And believe it or not, we had Neil Young in the same box as well, because Neil is a huge hockey fan. And that game between Canada and the USA, I've been to thousands of hockey games in my life. And I have to say that game between Canada and the USA, and I was in Salt Lake in 2002 when Mario let the puck go through his legs, and I think it was a sack pass to Korea, and that was another one that was just incredible, Canada-USA. Mm-hmm. But that game that you guys played, what are your memories of that game? Because to me, that was the greatest hockey game I have ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It was the greatest game I've ever been a part of. You know, that whole 2 weeks I was there was just remarkable, the way that Vancouver put those Olympics on, and the energy around the city, around the building, not only for hockey, but all the other sports too, was just absolutely amazing to be a part of. And then specifically that game, you know, we beat Canada in the round robin there leading up to the medal rounds. And there was so much hype going into that game, U.S. versus Canada. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for me, I remember in that game was, you know, being down a goal late in the third, and as me and Bobby Ryan were sitting next to each other in the middle of the bench. I don't think either of us played a shift in the third period at that.
Oh, I think we lost him. Did we lose him? Callie, are you there? Or are you gone? I think he's gone. Oh, well, we'll have to get him back. That was fantastic. That's a bummer to lose him in the middle of that. So that's Ryan Callahan, of course, who just retired. He was the captain of the New York Rangers and played in Tampa Bay and just announced his retirement, which it's crazy to think. But I think, as I said, he leaves it all on the ice because he was having some physical issues and it was just time to go. Because Ryan's not an old guy. Ryan's a young guy, relatively speaking. I mean, depends on how old you are, what a young person is and what an older person is, but he's 35 years old. Hey, Ryan, you dropped off. So you were talking about how you and Bobby Ryan were on the bench.
Yeah. So me and Bobby Ryan were, I don't think we played a shift in that third period. We're kind of spectators at that point. But I remember watching, you know, Zach Parise scores that goal and me and Bobby Ryan jump in the air. My helmet gets knocked off in the celebrations, ends up being at like center ice. I got to go get my helmet, off the ice. And I just remember sitting in the room afterwards and thinking to myself, like, holy cow, like, you know, we're a goal away from winning a gold medal in this atmosphere, this building. There's so much energy in here. And before every period, I usually go out in the hallway and do like a little stretch or whatever. So I'm out there, and Ron Wilson, at the time, the head coach of USA, it comes up to me and goes, hey, you and Chris Drury are going to be taking some of the defensive zone draws. And holy cow, talk about a switch in my mindset. And, you know, I haven't really played at all. I'm starting to move my legs. I'm like, holy cow, this is going to be crazy. And I think I ended up getting out there for one shift in the overtime. But yeah, it was a wild game. And obviously would have been like to come out on the other side of that, but I'm awfully proud of that silver medal. It's pretty special.
So as I was saying, you had a long and illustrious career and just really played your heart out for the teams you played for, just for two teams. But before we get into playing for the Rangers, you, from what I read, looked up to a former New York Ranger and Detroit Red Wing and St. Louis Blue and Brendan Shanahan. Was he the guy for you growing up?
He was. He's probably the main guy for me growing up. I just love the way he played. You know, he scored goals. He fought. He threw his body around. You know, I loved watching him play. And obviously, being from Rochester, I was a huge Sabres fan as well. So I was a big Pat LaFontaine fan also. But, you know, being a Shanahan fan growing up, I had his poster on my wall. And, you know, I remember walking into that room the first time, and he comes up to me and introduces himself. And I almost started laughing. I'm like, you don't have to introduce yourself. And, you know, I know who you are. You've been my favorite player growing up. It's kind of just a surreal feeling to have that, you know, chance to play alongside him. You know, being such a fan growing up.
And so, ironically enough, though, if I'm not mistaken, you got called up on February 3rd to replace Shanahan, who was injured in the Rangers lineup against the Montreal Canadiens.
I did. Yeah, I did. It was, I was kind of up and down. I think I played only two games up to that point. My first game was in Buffalo, lucky enough. Obviously, being so close to home, I had so much family and friends there. I got sent down. Got called back up, played one game, got sent down. So I was up and down. But one of the times I got called up was for him because he was injured. So it's kind of crazy how it all works out.
Now, being captain of the New York Rangers, if you're a Canadian hockey fan, you understand what it's like to be captain of the Montreal Canadiens. You understand what it's like to be captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs and what that means. Those are the two originals. There's something about the original six, captain of the Boston Bruins, captain of the Detroit Red Wings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What was it like to become the captain of the New York Rangers? Because I know a lot of guys that played in New York. You know, I'm buddies with Ty Domi, and he doesn't ever have to buy a meal in that city again. But what was it like for you being the captain of the New York Rangers?
Yeah, obviously a huge honor. I mean, that was definitely the highlight of my career, being able to wear the C on that sweater. You know, obviously it was my first goal was just to try to make the team, you know, play a game or two in the NHL and then to have it develop. And, you know, eventually, obviously me wearing the C there, I'm extremely lucky for that and something I'll always cherish. That's a special, very special organization, a special city. You know, and I absolutely loved my time in New York. Those fans are second to none when that garden gets going and everything else. And, yeah, I can't say enough about that organization and how honored I was to be able to wear the C there.
And then you go to Tampa, and you play a bunch of years in Tampa. And I know that in your retirement address on social media, you gave a lot of thanks to Jeff Vinnick and the organization there for the way they treated you and your wife and your family. And, of course, you thanked the New York Rangers. But what was it like ending up in Tampa after being with the New York Rangers and being a part of a powerhouse Tampa Bay Lightning team?
Yeah, I'll be honest. When I got traded to Tampa, I didn't know what to expect going into that room. You know, I knew they were a good team, but I didn't realize how young and talented they were. You know, I got traded there. Obviously, I was a pending UFA at the end of the year, and when I first got traded, all my thoughts were, you know, I'm going to go to free agency and see what's out there and weigh my options. And, you know, I've gone this far, and obviously contract negotiations with the Rangers, you know, didn't work out. And we've kind of gone through the really hard part of the year. You know, I'll go to free agency. But as soon as I got there, the organization, the fans, and most importantly, the level of skill they had that on their team and how close they were, I thought, to competing and winning. Changed my mind pretty quickly, and I wanted to re-sign in Tampa. You know, and we enjoyed a lot of good years there. Unfortunately, came up short a couple of years with one Stanley Cup Finals and two Conference Final Game Sevens. But But, yeah, I can't say enough about that organization. And Jeff Finnick, the owner there, helped us, me and my wife, get our organization geared towards pediatric cancer, the Ryan Callahan Foundation, off the ground. And that's probably been my, you know, what I'm most proud of, honestly, in my career is being able to start that organization and helping so many kids and so many families that are going through such a hard time.
Last question before we let you go, and our guest is Ryan Callahan, former National Hockey League forward for the Rangers and the Lightning, former captain of the Rangers, at the Real Cali 24 on Twitter, and a pleasure again to have you on the program. You played a style of hockey that comes with consequences. It comes at a price. You were a guy that Ranger fans absolutely loved and Lightning fans because you threw yourself around with reckless abandon. And you put the puck in the net. You helped others put the puck in the net. You didn't take a ton of penalties, but you certainly were a guy, especially because of your size, you definitely played above your weight class. Any thoughts on your style of play, where it came from? And ultimately, do you think if maybe you didn't always constantly leave it out on the ice that maybe you would have played a couple of years longer?
I guess the back end of your question, I don't think I would have played as long as I did unless I played that way. I think that's what made me successful was, you know, trying the way I competed, the way, you know, I tried to block shots, leave it on the ice, throw my body around, contribute offensively when I could. But, I mean, that's what made me successful. That's why I had so much success in the league. And, you know, it was instilled in me at a young age, no matter what you're doing through my parents, is you give 110% at it. You know, that's whether that's yard work or you're on the ice. I mean, you know, your name is on your work and you take pride in that. And that's what I did throughout my career. And, you know, I think John Tortorella was a huge part of that, giving me an opportunity to play. You know, he rewards guys that play that way. And I flourished under his coaching and his, you know, his systems. And, you know, I don't regret for 1 minute playing the way I did. Cause like I said, I don't think I play as long as I did, without playing that way. That's what made me successful. And, I'm dealing with the bumps and bruises a little bit now. And obviously the back injury, which made me stop, but, you know, I'll take it for the amount of success and how blessed I was for my career.
You definitely had a great career, 15 seasons, and you left an impact not just on the ice, but of course you continue to leave an impact off the ice, helping others. Greatly appreciate your time, Ryan. Take care of yourself. My best to you and your family, and all the best in 2021.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on, and Happy New Year's.
That is Ryan Callahan, former National Hockey League forward, Rangers and Lightning, captain of the Rangers, announcing his retirement just this week. Great to have him on the program. We're going to take the break, come back, and get to some more of your texts when we return on Writer's Block here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Time to get to some of your texts. Manuela, a frequent listener, listens all the time, communicates all the time, and I'm happy to hear from her. Hi, Joey. On the topic of chicks, arguing with the years of the politically correct movement, the only question should be, does it make sense? And will the person you're referring to get it? Then there is no issue, in my opinion. It's not intrinsically a bad word. On the topic of Chara, I'm so sad, but as with Krug's move to the Blues, it could only have happened in 2020. We're going to take the break, come back, and wrap up the show with Rob Blake, World Juniors tonight, Canada, Finland. But they have the most players in the tournament. And John Clayton from 710 ESPN NFL Week 17. When we return on Writer's Block on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And welcome back. It is Writer's Block. It's New Year's Eve. What are your New Year's resolutions? Text us at 590-590. We would love to hear from you. We'll get to your texts in a few minutes, but do you have a New Year's resolution? Are you a New Year's resolution person? Or do you resolve to not resolve? I'm all about resolving. And right now I resolve to help you make sense of the NFL Week 17 conundrum. And that is who's in, who's not going to be in. And I couldn't do it without the help of our next guest, the accomplished, illustrious, loquacious John Clayton from 710 ESPN Seattle, NFL insider. John, welcome to the program. Thank you very much for being on it. How are you today?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Now, I have to ask before we talk NFL, are you a New Year's resolution guy?
No, that's the weird part. I think you can understand this. It's like when you cover the NFL or you cover sports, particularly the NFL, I mean, you don't have holidays. And so because of that, it's like, okay, what do you do during Christmas? You work. What do you do during New Year's? You work. What do you do New Year's Day? You work. And, of course, the great part is it's working covering the National Football League. But because of that and the fact you have so much work to do, usually I think there was a couple years where I tried to make some resolutions. I would forget them by like the 4th or 5th of January. So I don't really – I think about it, but I don't do it.
Yeah, I beat myself up mentally so much that I'm in a constant state of resolving to resolve, which leads to very little resolving. So I think that's kind of the best way to put my scenario. We look at the National Football League in Week 17, and first and foremost, we have a development with a gentleman who has woven magic throughout his career, and that last game, Ryan Fitzpatrick did something that I couldn't even believe was possible, to have your head tilted at that angle and throw a ball that gets caught and gets completed. It was just mind-blowing. But now, unfortunately for Miami, Fitzpatrick tested positive for COVID-19, and he is out on Sunday. What does this mean for the Dolphins as they fight for a playoff berth against, oddly enough, the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, what it means is that they need to have a great game from Tua, because if not, they may not make the playoffs. And so the pressure is going to be on Tua to try to do well. And you can see that they're pretty injured at the wide receiver position. That doesn't help. They're not great at tight end, and their running game has been really not that great. So it really comes down to defense has to play well, and what the Dolphins have to hope is that Josh Allen gets a rest, doesn't play much, and they try to go with a lineup that doesn't do much. Because, again, you know you're not going to catch, if you're Buffalo, the Kansas City Chiefs or the number one seed, you're pretty much number two. You might be number three, or you're going to be number two or three, but does it make that much of a difference? And so it really depends a lot on what Buffalo is going to do. We already know Kansas City is going to pretty much go with backups and not really go with too many starters. So you wonder, what Buffalo team are you going to face? But it really puts the pressure on Tua.
Yeah, and Flores, their coach, benched Tagovailoa in the fourth quarter last week and put Fitzpatrick in, and we saw what happened. He jump-started the offense and led an incredible comeback over the Raiders. And the win and in season finale scenario that is presented to them is only exacerbated by the fact that they are playing a team in their division that has had an incredible season, and we'll get into that in just a second. But the irony of Ryan Fitzpatrick not being able to play against his team is not lost upon me. But this is a big loss, because he's not just a regular backup. He's really served as a mentor to Tagovailoa. And I don't know that – look, I don't know what the dynamic is between them. It seems okay. But Fitzpatrick is just – was a security blanket that, as you saw when he came in and orchestrated that comeback, most teams don't have. And I wonder how that's going to play out this week, especially because they signed Jake Ruddock, who was on their practice squad earlier in the season. And as you said, they've been banged up at other positions that matter.
You know, Greg Roman, who's the offensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, when he was in San Francisco, he told me the importance of having a good quarterback room. And because they had Colin Kaepernick, who was, you know, starting to learn and become a good quarterback, but he had Alex Smith there. And Alex Smith was so good at teaching Colin what to do, whether it's to be coming in to at least what time you come in the building, what do you study, how do you get through your day, how do you prepare for other teams. I mean, he helped coach him up, and I would imagine Ryan's pretty much done the same thing, because you've seen the results. I mean, Tua goes out, didn't have a great first game, but he's done so well in the other games. And so you put all that together, and not, you know, not having him play as a backup, but also not even having him on the sidelines, because now he's going to be quarantined for 10 days. That's a big loss.
So will the Browns end their playoff drought, and what happens in the NFC East, right? You've got a bunch of intriguing matchups, not the least of which are the games involving those teams. Now let's concentrate on first Cleveland and Pittsburgh. The Steelers are resting Roethlisberger. I imagine that TJ Watt will get rested. I imagine a bunch of their starters. I think more than we even anticipate, because if there's a team that needs a rest, I do believe it is the Steelers, because I think they're the only team in the NFL that didn't get a bye week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because there's only two bye weeks. Kansas City got them, and of course, New Orleans is trying to secure their bye week. And so you put all that together, and you know, it puts a strain. And so it really, when you're talking at the top of the league right now, it's wide open in the NFC, because Green Bay probably is going to get the number one seed. New Orleans is still hoping. Seattle has some outside hope. Kansas City has already secured it. But now it's a matter, if you're going number two and number three as far as, you know, where you're playing, it doesn't make that much of a difference, because, like, for example, the Bills got a break today when they found out that 7,600 people were going to be able to come in and, you know, be in the stands. And so that's some, and that helps. But in the end, it's one where, you know, you just got to make the best you can and, you know, play out this season. And the great part is they made it through the season. I mean, they've got 240 games in. They got the 16 games coming in. Cleveland's in a little bit of a tough spot because they've got 11 players who are in the COVID list, but five came off today. Four aren't going to be available for the game. And so you wonder, are they going to suffer like they did last week when they lost their top five wide receivers?
Let's talk about the Bills having fans for their playoff games. The Buffalo Bills have been one of these stories in the NFL this year, and in this part of the world, they've been arguably the biggest story. They're a team that put an exclamation point on an incredible season that's 12-3 so far against their nemesis, against the evil empire. They finally vanquished their complete and utter problem, and that was the New England Patriots. Now, the Patriots have been a problem for everybody else, but particularly for Buffalo, and to see them do that on Monday Night Football was incredibly satisfying for the Bills Mafia. But now that they've announced that they're going to be able to have fans at their playoff game, I'm trying to think of another team that 16,500 people in a stadium that big would make as much noise, and I don't think I can.
No, I think that it's, even though it's only going to be a small amount, you know, I think it's just great because it gives some fans the chance to really enjoy what's been one of the greatest seasons in 25 years in Buffalo. And, of course, I mean, you know, just the fact that they can be in there. Now, of course, if it works out, they'll be able to be there in the playoffs. And so you throw all that together, and it's I think it's just a great thing for the Bills and a great thing for the Bills fans.
Now, let's turn our attention to a couple of other games of consequence here, and Washington is one of them. So, Washington and the Eagles, right? We've seen what this NFC is, and we'll get into the Giants and Dallas in a second here, but this NFC East has been, it's been a attention grabber for all the wrong reasons. And when you looked at some of these teams at the beginning of the season, you thought, okay, there are a couple of okay teams that should be able to make a little bit of a run, and then there'll be a bunch of terrible ones. But I don't know that anybody had anticipated what happened in terms of injuries, in terms of quarterback flipping, but the Eagles are in trouble on the defensive side of the ball because they're out of defensive secondary players almost, and their linemen on both sides of the ball are in big trouble. They got a ton of injuries. And then Washington gets rid of Dwayne Haskins, and they're almost out of quarterbacks. I mean, this could be the last man standing battle.
But isn't it fitting that in this division, which actually turns out to be the second worst in NFL history, the worst was the 2008 NFC West that was 10-30 in out-of-division games. Now, this NFC East was 11-28-1, so it's just a little bit better. But it's all fitting. It's that you got nothing but backup quarterbacks. Now, it does appear that Alex Smith may be able to play. He did a little bit on the practice field, and that does give them the chance to maybe get to that seventh win. You know, you've got, you know, Daniel Jones, who has struggled with turnovers and all those different things. In Philadelphia, of course, it's been a disaster, and they're out of the playoffs. And maybe there's an outside chance for Dallas to be able to do it. But I think it's so fitting that you get to the end of the season and you got nothing but backups and changes and all that. And you know what's going to end up happening. They'll make the playoffs, whoever team's going to win the division, and they're going to get blown out in the first game.
If you are just joining us, our guest is John Clayton, NFL Insider, 710 ESPN Seattle, at John Clayton NFL. You're listening to the Sportsnet Radio Network. My name is Joey Vendetta. And let's talk a little bit more about this Steelers-Browns game and what we saw from the Steelers against the Colts. A team that couldn't run the ball and still didn't run the ball in that game had 21 yards in rushing. That would be Pittsburgh. And they managed to come back and have one of the greatest comebacks, if not the, I think it was the second greatest comeback of the Mike Tomlin era. What Pittsburgh team are we going to see heading into the playoffs? And how much is this resting of players going to benefit the Steelers?
I think it's going to benefit Ben because, you know, they get them a chance to sort out what went wrong for that 3.5 games that he looked terrible and was throwing the ball short. He takes over the play calling in the second half, gets the ball deep, and they were able to make that incredible comeback. It gives their defense a chance to rest up and also gives the coaching staff a chance to figure out, is there anything they can do with that running game? But I think a break like that, because a bye week can be so good for a team. Because, you know, remember, one of the complaints that they had with the Tennessee change when they had to move the game back is that their bye week was all of a sudden week three as opposed to week six. And so, or I think it was week eight maybe. And so, you know, this team has now gone as long as any other team in football without a bye week. And so now it gets a chance to, you know, rest up and then try to at least, you know, get their minds fresh going into the playoffs, but also get their confidence back after 3.5 bad games.
John, before we let you go, a couple more things. In the NFC, Packers are the one seed right now. Saints are at 2. Seahawks are at 3. Those three teams, how far apart are they? Or is that NFC at the top jammed in terms of who ends up making it through to the Super Bowl?
No, it's jammed because what you're looking at, there's flaws in each team. You know, for example, you know, Green Bay, we can talk about Aaron Rodgers likely going to win the MVP, which it looks like that's going to happen with the 44 touchdown passes. But they've also had the easiest schedule in the National Football League. They've only had three games against teams with winning records, and that includes a Chicago Bears team that may finish 8-8 if Green Bay wins. You know, New Orleans, of course, Drew Brees coming back from the cracked ribs. You know, he's not as sharp as you would hope going into the playoffs, and so you wonder about that. Seattle, their defense is coming together. Their offense has gone through a tough stretch. But, you know, I think it's pretty wide open at the top because, again, these three teams are the best three in the NFC. But now which team can get that win in the playoffs late, because I think all three will be in there late, is going to be the fascinating thing to see. It's more wide open in the NFC than it is the AFC.
I'm going to ask you a final question here. You said Aaron Rodgers is going to win the MVP. I think Josh Allen is the MVP, and I think he's the MVP because he's a guy that wasn't developing in a manner that maybe we expected as rapidly as the team had hoped, and then all of a sudden that player development that they executed in Buffalo brought forth a guy that has exhibited all the attributes of a superstar quarterback, and without him, I don't think the Bills are anywhere. You can say that about the other two, but it's just that it was unexpected, and maybe not unexpected, but maybe not this early. And the Buffalo Bills are as good a team as there are in football.
Yeah, I agree with that. But again, I think the difference is that, you know, when 44 touchdown passes and the number one seed, you know, the edge is going to go to Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, because think about this, what does he have at wide receiver other than Devontae Adams? Very little. you know, at least in the case of Josh, Josh does have a great acquisition in Stephon Diggs. And then on top of that, you know, even though John Brown's been out for several weeks, you know, they also have the great play of Cole Beasley in the slot. So he's got more to work with. But the great part is how he's grown and improved his offense by 10 points a game compared to last year.
John, as always, we thank you very much for your time. Take care of yourself. All the best in 2021, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay, great. Thanks.
That is John Clayton, NFL Insider, 710 ESPN Seattle. We're going to take the break and come back with some of your thoughts and some of your texts, and even on the Toronto Raptors, who tonight, New Year's Eve, face off against the 2-2 New York Knicks in Tampa. It's a home game. But what are we going to see tonight from the Raptors? Are we going to see the team that squanders a lead in the third quarter and can't close? And are you concerned? We'll discuss when we return on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back. It is Writer's Block. It is New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2020. Do you have any resolutions? Are you going to go out and party tonight? Or are you going to listen to the overlords? I'm being facetious. They're just dictators, not overlords. Sorry. We get a text from George in Toronto at 590-590. My hope for the new year is for everyone, including you guys on the radio, to finally wake up and see what this globalist agenda really is. I read this earlier. I just have to read it again. Don't give people too much credit, buddy. That's all I'm going to say about that. Ryan from Markham. No plans to hang out with anyone for New Year's Eve. Someone's got to be responsible. No New Year's resolution. Never understood why people wait till the new year to decide on improving their lifestyle, even though they're just going to probably not follow through with it anyways. I actually have gone, I hate the word diet, but I'm curbing my ginormous appetite. I've actually been successful in the last several days. You know what they say? I think it's 2 weeks to form a habit. I think it's 2 weeks. If you can pull it together for 2 weeks, I mean, I quit smoking a long time. I can't even believe I smoked. I cannot believe that I smoked. It's astonishing to me. It was a Sisyphean task to quit smoking for me until I actually quit. That means endless and unavailing. It's your word of the day. Sisyphean. But when it comes to food, and I also quit drugs and alcohol, and when it comes to food, food's just that thing that it's just too easy. It's there. It's everywhere. You can't stop it. I mean, we need it. And there's a ton of people right now who don't have it. So if you can donate to Food Banks Canada, probably a really good idea. I wish someone would just come and empty my fridge and take it all. Bob M. in the 905. That could be Toronto if you have your cell phone. I still have an LA number, but I got a Toronto number, so now I have two numbers because I needed another bill. But I have a good 416 number. OG, not Ananobi. We'll talk about the Raptors here in a second. Are you worried about the Raptors? We took some calls earlier. The phone lines are open. We're going to get Rob Blake on in a little bit here. General manager of the LA Kings, of course, Canada tonight against the Finsters. And the Kings have 9 prospects in the World Juniors. 9. And that's not no in German. That's the number. So a couple of good games tonight. Sweden, USA should be good as well. But anyway, the food thing. Food is just too easy. It doesn't kill you instantly or even really quickly. I mean, smoking, you know, you're ultimately something's going to happen. Drugs, yeah, those aren't good. You booze it up too much repeatedly over and over. That's a sliding scale in the wrong direction. But food, it's just so friendly. And I mean, dessert, it's fluffy. I have such a bad sweet tooth with chocolate. But instead of putting together some New Year's resolutions, I decided to start early because I've done this before. I don't know how many of you have done it before, but I've lost 70 pounds. Then, of course, I gained it back. Now, I didn't know I had 70 to lose, but once you get going in the right direction, it's so much easier. And I mean that for anything in your life. If you're struggling with anything, if you can just take one step in the opposite, just that one step, and hold there for a while, because I got to tell you, it's hard to hold there, but you can do it. If you can do that, then you can take the second step eventually, and then a few more, and then all of a sudden, you've turned it around, and you're not looking in the other direction anymore. That's the hardest thing. Text us at 590-590 if you have a New Year's resolution or if you want to chime in on the Raptors. If you want to talk about the Raptors who, I mean, are you sour on Norman Powell? Do you think maybe Pascal Siakam isn't the guiding and shining light that this franchise is going to need for the next several years? Does he need someone to ride shotgun? Are we relying too much on Kyle Lowry? Every time he leaves the game, the wheels fall off. Now, it's only exacerbated by Norm Powell being in a funk, and I don't mean Parliament Funkadelic. I mean in a scoring funk. He's 4-for-23 from the field. We need more. His year last year was astounding. 16 points on 50% shooting from the field. 40% from three. This guy's got talent. Lots of experience. He gets off to slow starts. And look, Nick Nurse ain't taking him out of the rotation. He's just not. But if Powell ain't scoring, he's not doing a hell of a lot else. So are you concerned? Let's see. Bob M. in the 905. I got to finish this text. Joey, 365 days ago today. What better way to end this year of trials listening to you? Well, that's very kind. That being said, wishing you and your family a happy new year. Just a thank you. My wife loves how I bubble up when you're on. Truly enjoy your programming and discussing sports. That is incredibly kind of you. I mean, I can handle it when people rip me too. I don't particularly care. As Charles Barkley once said, why the hell do RG3 care about what some electrician think of him in Virginia? Yep, exactly, Charles. That's me. I don't care about what some electrician in Virginia thinks of me either. Especially because you're never going to meet the person. Pretty simple. So, are you concerned about the Toronto Raptors on a level that makes you think that maybe long term, they've made some wrong decisions? Or is it too early to jump to that conclusion? Look, we're going to give them the chance to get it right. But they're playing the Knicks tonight. And the Knicks have a tight rotation. And if the Raptors can bring some of these guys off the bench and stretch the Knicks a little bit, you got to think the Raptors are going to win tonight. They're heavy favorites, too. I mean, they're 0-3. 2-2 Knicks, and you would think that maybe the Raptors, it would be even. But no, the Raptors are prohibitive favorites tonight. I think they're set at 93% to win this game. But every time Kyle Lowry leaves, and it's usually in the third quarter, even for a minute, it's a problem, and that's a problem. Do you want to see more of Malachi Flynn? I call him Malachi Flynn because I'm old enough to remember a show called Happy Days. And there was an episode where the Malachi brothers went after the Fonz in a demolition derby, where the two of them sandwiched the Fonz's car, and it was called the Malachi Crunch. That's what they should call him, Malachi Flynn, Malachi. I mean, I know it's his name. But ultimately, this is really on Norm Powell. Maybe Terrence Davis gets more minutes. I mean, you saw Stanley Johnson the other night get some minutes, and that played well. It was brief. But maybe he gets more. I don't know that, you know, Aaron Baines, he's what's called a serviceable NBA player. Chris Boucher, man, he was good the other night against San Antonio. Again, the Raptors were able to shoulder the load because they could share the load. They can't share the load anymore. the guys that shared the load from a leadership standpoint are gone. Don't underestimate how important Marc Gasol was from a leadership standpoint. Matt from Richmond Hill. I believe the Raptors will finish anywhere between 6th and 8th in the East. Losing Ibaka was huge. He's a glue guy, clutch, and understands Nurse's defensive and offensive schemes. I'll take the Raptors more than a few games to get into the rhythm. It'll take the Raptors more than a few games. Combining Nurse's coaching IQ with the grit on our team, and the Raptors will have a playoff-bound season, but they can't compete with the Nets, the Celts, the Sixers, the Bucks, and the Heat. I think they can compete with the Sixers. Maybe the Celtics on a good day, but if the Nets are healthy, forget it. The Bucks, at this point, forget it. And the Heat, forget it. And that, you know, when you are gambling and thinking that you're going to get Giannis Antetokounmpo and he bails and stays where he wants to stay, we got a happy effing New Year, buddy, from the Schwa. Oh, and my brother Sicky, cheers. All right, right on. I don't know what that means. But anyway, you're right. Ibaka and Gasol, mainly Ibaka, but Gasol too, they miss him. They just do. And Kyle Lowry, again, you cannot say anything bad about Kyle Lowry. You can't. This isn't about Kyle Lowry. Maybe it's about Fred VanVleet a little bit. Need more out of him. But Pascal Siakam cannot foul out of a game with 6 minutes left and have all five fouls occur in the 6 minutes. Not happening. You want to be the leader of the team? That is beyond boneheaded. And then you don't even sit on the bench. You pull the I'm taking my ball and going home, except you don't go home and it's not your ball. Who else can you get a spark from in this lineup? I don't see it. This is really on a couple of guys. Pascal has to be more consistent, more assertive. OG has to be the guy that can get you 20 and a bunch of threes. Fred VanVleet has to show up like he can. Norm Powell has to. And they can't rely on Kyle Lowry the way they have been. We are going to take the break. We're going to come back with Rob Blake. But before we do that, coming up right after traffic, Sports Interactions Inside the Lines, Thursday edition with George Russick and Steve Rapp. They get you ready for all the playoff clinching scenarios and the rest of Week 17 in the NFL. And we'll be joined by Rob Blake, the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings, in a couple of minutes here. A couple more of your texts. Joey, like your show. I like you already. This is from Polly from Leaside. Was still alive in my survival pool last week. Got stung by the Jets and my buddy lost because Cincinnati hurts. Hoping that Nurse can turn around the Raptors, but short season could hurt. Yeah, as we've been talking about the Raptors tonight against the New York Knicks in Tampa. It is a home game, of course, and you can catch it at 7:30 on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Roger Lajoie has the pregame and halftime show. Coverage gets going at 7 p.m. on radio. Brad Fay and Sherman Hamilton have pregame coverage on Sportsnet TV at 7 p.m. You have to give Nick Nurse the benefit of the doubt like he is giving Norman Powell the benefit of the doubt. You have no choice unless you think that Malachi Flynn's going to be the solution. You have to let this team get sorted. And as I said, the Raptors are favorites tonight. They're heavy favorites. And there's one thing you don't argue with most of the time, Vegas. They know something. And it makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. You know, maybe Norm gets off the slump tonight. Shoots better from the field. Maybe they shoot a bunch of threes. And ideally, they don't have to rely on Kyle Lowry to play the whole game because that's not going to work in this type of truncated season. It's just not going to work. It's going to eventually catch up to you. Tonight, World Juniors, Canada, Finland, That is going to be, so far, the game of the tournament, I think. I mean, you got Sweden-USA. That will be a great game as well. But Canada-Finland, finally, Canada's going to have some competitions. It's Group A up for grabs. And the World Juniors, New Year's Eve, Edmonton, and the Canadians have scored 10-plus goals in two of their first three games. And Finland's played well defensively. Canada's the favorite, but that full day off to rest is going to probably be helpful as well. And it's my pleasure now to welcome a gentleman that I've known for a very, very long time, had an incredible career in the National Hockey League, and is now the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings. Please welcome to the program, Rob Blake. Rob, how you doing, pal?
I'm good. How you doing?
You know what? I'm doing okay, my friend. I know that I texted you a couple days ago yesterday and asked you if you'd be on the show. How are things in Southern California right now? We know that it's pretty crazy all over the place, but yep. I've been, you know, still having a house there. I watch KTLA, and it looks like everything is filling up and not in a good way in terms of the hospitals, and this thing has gotten completely out of hand. What's it like from your perspective?
Yeah, no, same thing, Joey. Listen, like L.A. County itself, and I know we have the population here is, you know, is such so much more populated than other parts, but the numbers continue to rise, you know, through Thanksgiving, through the holidays. You know, we talk to the doctors, we talk to the infectious disease specialists and everything. Like you said, hospitals are filling up, ICU units and everything. So, you know, the lockdown, no different than in Ontario right now with restaurants and all that's been in place. But it becomes remarkable that it becomes second nature, masks out in public and everything. You almost look twice if someone doesn't have it on now. So, you know, I think people are trying to do the right things, trying to be, as safe as possible. You know, fortunately, we were able to open training camp, with meetings yesterday, but on ice today. And the players are the same way. They're open to all the new protocols. They just feel that that's part of it now. You have to take care of your teammates by doing the right things.
Well, listen, you talk about opening training camp, and a bunch of teams have not opened training camp. And when you texted, you told me that the guys were going to be on the ice, and we discussed what time you were going to come on. But what is that like for you and your organization having to manage training camp right now and getting guys on the ice? And I know you got to observe the protocols. I understand all that. It's got to be a little eerie when the rest of Los Angeles, which is a city of a vast population, always traffic, always people out, always something to do. It has to be a little bit eerie going to and from the rink.
Yeah. That's about the only good thing out of this whole COVID situation is traffic in LA. For sure. But like just an average day. So we run a training camp, 36 players. We have to separate rooms now. You can only have 10 people in the weight room at the same time. You have to, there's 6 feet apart. Guys are used to having breakfast and lunch in a buffet style. Now it's to-go containers. You can't hang around and eat. You've got, so there's, they walk in, the first thing they do when they come in, they go right to the testing area. And you test, and then you get into your dressing room, and you stay with your groups. We even have to do like team meeting yesterday. So like your introduction meeting used to take place either in the dressing room or a big meeting room in your arena. We had to do it on, you'll be familiar with the pond at TSC, the small rink. They've covered that over to have all our meetings because we have to space the chairs 8 feet apart. So all this takes place, but like I said, I think everybody understands severity, but they also understand how to, you have to do the best thing you can for the guy next to you. And you've got to be cautious, and you got to do the right precautions.
Let's talk about your prospects first before we get into the actual team and what's going on with the Kings and the signing of Athanasiou, which I like. I think it's got a lot of upside. And, you've got some prospects, a bunch of prospects. For the second year in a row, you've got 9 prospects, which is the most in the tournament. We know about Quentin Byfield and a bunch of the other ones, and we saw Jordan Spence jump into the fray and get an opportunity because of Braden Schneider's hit on Jan-Lukas Schumacher against Team Germany, and it opened the door for Spence, who took advantage of the opportunity. In watching your prospects at the tournament, what has stood out for you? What have you noticed? Is there anybody that has maybe impressed you more than you thought? Is there somebody that you're looking for more from? Any light you can shed on that? I know it's a lot to go over because you have 9 prospects.
Yeah, well, I'll start kind of with USA and probably on the back end with Brock Faber. You know, listen, when we do the draft, our amateur scouts come in and they all have kind of their favorites in the draft, and that Tony Gasparini, who does a tremendous job in the USA for us, had talked a lot about Brock Faber. And then you watch him when he gets into the University of Minnesota as a true freshman in the first 3 weekends, and he continually gets more and more ice time and gets moved in. He comes into the U.S. camp, starts down the bottom pair and works himself up with partners with Cam York playing, you know, upwards of the second most minutes on the D. So he's able to handle it. So you get a better look at him with the best players. And, obviously with Turcotte and Kaliev on that team, and then, fortunate with Cam, with Byfield and the type of game he put up there last game. And we forget sometimes the pressure on these kids to produce. And they haven't played in, 7 or 8 months, some of them. And now starting this tournament, and they get one exhibition game. A lot of the games are canceled, postponed, so it's all thrown off. And you expect so much. So it was nice to see Quentin put up big numbers in that game. And really, I thought, settled in and got more comfortable as that game went on by getting those points and become more relaxed, And yesterday in the Finns, Kasper Simontala, a player that Christian Root, who's been very high on back in Finland, playing a much lower league a year ago, but really producing, and now you get to see him again with the top players, and he's having a good tournament there. So, listen, we're fortunate we've got a lot of guys in the tournament. So every game there's something there to watch with your organization.
You're in a position now with the LA Kings, and you just signed Athanasiou. And before we get into the roster and what the prospects are for this year and where you see the Kings sitting, because you have an interesting combination. You have, superstars, and then you got some holdovers who've put in a lot of good work for the team, and then you got a ton of young players. But let's start with the Athanasiou signing. What prompted you guys to sign Athanasiou? Was it something you thought about for a while, or do you just see the opportunity to add a guy with some incredible wheels and skill and upside?
Yeah, no, we had zeroed in there early on. I think a few days after he wasn't qualified there with Edmonton, discuss the possibilities, more and more discuss the opportunity we felt he had here. Right. So, he's coming off a year that wasn't great, but he had 30 goals in Detroit, and he relies heavily on his speed, creates a lot of offense on his own there. But we just felt with our lineup, we, like you said, we have some veterans in key positions, and then we have a lot of young players that are either first year in the league or establishing themselves. So there is an opportunity for a guy like him that's been able to score goals. We have a lot of projections with our young guys, but they haven't done this at the NHL level. So, we discussed the opportunity as it, the pause went on and we got closer and closer to camp, the discussions became more and more, and then you find a range that you settle on, and we're fortunate to get it done when we did and get him in here. Like I said, he's in that protocol right now. I think he's in day 2 or 3 of testing and isolation. We have an 8-day period there before he can enter our group.
All right. And as I was alluding to, and we've only got a couple of minutes here, so I'll go quickly. I have an infinitely intimate knowledge of this organization because I lived there a long time. I was there for both Stanley Cups. And now you've got the Lakers winning a championship. You got the Dodgers winning a championship. Do you feel a little bit of heat now, considering you guys were the ones who started the run?
Yeah, we better get going. That's right. No, I know. It was terrific to see those organizations. And, the Dodgers obviously winning their World Series here in a long time. The Lakers back where they always belong. So, yes, there is pressure there. There's also pressure I think on our part to provide our five veterans that have won here that opportunity again. Like we narrowed that down early: Carter, Brown, Kopitar, Doughty, and Quick. Listen, you know, we were, for the last couple of years, we had to move good players out. We knew what we had to get accomplished. And at the same time, we understood that, you know, moving some veterans that have won, you're always looking for that eventually. So we were fortunate. We had that. We had guys that had been drafted by the Kings, had been developed, took ownership in these championships. So I do. I feel pressure to get them players, to get it competitive again, so that, you know, as their career goes on, they get another chance at it, because they've given us a lot.
And before we let you go, I want to touch upon Quentin Byfield. We saw him come alive. Sometimes the big guys take a little bit longer to get going. But as you said, a lot of these guys haven't played hockey in months, in 8-9 months. So there is that part of it. What do you see in Byfield, and what do you think Kopitar is going to do to mentor this guy? Because I've said it several times, you couldn't have a better mentor at the center position and as a person than Kings captain Anje Kopitar.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to put Gabe Vilardi in this group with, yep, Byfield, as just because probably the size of these centermen, like they're a similar stature to Kopitar, but you know, they're going to be able to come in and I noticed it with Gabe here last year and this year, he's always watching Kopitar to see what he's doing, what's he doing before the game, what's he doing on off days in the gym, how's he preparing, and like you said, we can tell these guys all we want, we can sit in a meeting and say you got to do this, this, and this. They're going to learn from the peers, and they're going to learn from the ones that are established and have been dominant players. So we're fortunate there. You know, just touching a little bit on Byfield, you know, what we really noticed, you know, Mark Unetti, who heads up our amateur scouting, is the way he hunts pucks, and we saw it there the last game with Canada too. He gets on pucks and he turns a lot over. You know, he's got a long, long reach, and he's a big guy. I mean, at 6'4" at that age, but he can skate, so he's going to cover a big distance. So, you know, we looked at what Kopitar was able to do with our franchise and come in and become a dominant center, become a dominant center on a winning team, a Stanley Cup winning team. So, you know, we hope these kids get a real good look, spend some time with Kopitar over the next few years to really establish what it means to be a good pro. And like you said, Anze leads that way all the time.
Rob, thanks a lot for doing this. Give my best to your wife, Brandy, and your family. All the best in 2021. And I hope I get the opportunity to bother you for some tickets in the very near future.
Anytime. I just pass you on the loop for that.
All right, man. Take care. That is Rob Blake, the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings. And always a pleasure to have him on the program. Pleasure to have you along as well. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for being a part of the Sportsnet Radio Network. And thanks to Derek Brandeo and Mark Boffo for putting the show together. I wish you nothing but the best. A great 21 to you and yours from Joey Vendetta here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.